Thanks for tuning in. This is Matt Santos of the Mile High Show, and you are listening to episode 102, I believe, 102, and we are sitting out on the patio at El Charro Norte, a new restaurant, Mexican restaurant in Chino Valley, part of the El Charro family that consists of the original El Charro in Prescott, and I'm going to be sitting down with Gary, the owner of both restaurants, and at the same time listening to some music from a stripped-down version of Road 1 South, who have been guests here on the show in the past. We're going to be listening to an acoustic duo and maybe finagle a word or two from Dwight Devlin, the drummer, the backbone of Road 1 South. He's over there. He's they're setting up right now. Dwight is he's the roadie tonight, I think. So I guess that means he doesn't get the chicks. Is that how that goes, Dwight? Roadies don't get the chicks.
Not when they're married. No, you're married.
You're gonna get
and
the
I
most.
I love my wife.
You're gonna get the most important chick then. Is she coming tonight? Oh, good, good. It'll be good to see her. So the guys are setting up, and we're going to have a little fun out here. So have some good food, listen to some good music, have some good conversation with Gary. And if you haven't been out to El Charro yet, it is, for those of you in the Prescott area are probably familiar with the location, it's the old Doreen's Bar and Grill that was in operation for a long time. The Fishing Hole, I think, is what it was called before that. It butts up against the wash with beautiful, beautiful views of the countryside looking east from Chino Valley. And that's what I'm staring at right now, sitting out on the patio. It's a beautiful venue for food and music. They have music out here most weekends in the evenings, Fridays and Saturdays. Anything from full bands, which they've had out here before with Road 1 South, with Salt of the Earth, I think, was out here recently, and some really nice acoustic and smaller singer-songwriter sessions as well. Les Lyman, a friend of the show, has been out here several times, and I think Sky Conwell's been out here. Lots of good folks. Some, again, great music, great food, plenty to drink, and views that will knock your socks off. We'll post a few pictures that we've got that we've taken from out here. So sit back and enjoy. This episode is brought to you by Amazon. Use that Amazon link at milehighshow.com to do all your online shopping. And it lets Amazon know you got to them through us, and they give us a little thank you at the end of the month. So please continue to use that Amazon link at milehighshow.com. And also brought to you by let's have this one brought to you by Road 1 South, because they're going to be playing on September 3rd at Granite Creek Vineyards, the full band out there in Chino Valley. That is also the day of our Territorial Days parade. So come on out, spend the entire day in Chino Valley with the parade in the morning. Pop over to Granite Creek Vineyards to listen to some outstanding blues by Road 1 South, and then head over to Del Rio Elementary School for the FFA Corn Dinner, an annual event that brings in thousands and helps a great cause and keeps the ag program at Chino High afloat. It is a great fundraiser. So a parade, great blues, and all-you-could-eat corn dinner. So a great time in Chino Valley. So stick around there. And also the Yavapai County Fair, which begins September 8, 9, 10, and 11. Road 1 South will be headlining one of those nights. Hey, Dwight. What night are you guys at the fair? Saturday or Friday?
7 to 9 on Friday.
Friday night, the September 9th. Friday night from 7 to 9, they will be taking over the stage at the Yavapai County Fair. So look for links to those on our Facebook page as well as at milehighshow.com. So a couple of great opportunities for you to see Road 1 South, September 3rd at Granite Creek Vineyards, and September 9th at the Yavapai County Fair. So sit back and enjoy, and thanks for tuning in. Introduce yourself, Gary.
My name is Gary Denny, born and raised in Prescott, Arizona. Seven generations of my family lived in Arizona before me.
Oh,
five of them were born here.
Now, you don't see that a whole lot.
No.
Most of the folks, there's some of the old business and some of the old ranch families that have been here for generations, but there's a lot of transplants, myself included.
Right.
Yeah. So how have you seen the area change?
Oh, drastically. Yeah. You know, Chino Valley was an agrarian community, and they had the corn dinner, and, you know, we came out, used to come out to Chino and go to my friends, the Keegan's house, and milk cows with them, and,
yeah.
You know, and chase the goats around the yard, yeah, it's been, well, you know, I haven't seen it, but just, you know, 2 miles down the creek, my great-grandfather used to drive cattle down from Camp Wood.
Oh, wow.
And put them on the train there.
Was that the family business?
Yes.
Cattle, ranching?
Yep. On my dad's side of the family and on my mom's side, they were shopkeepers and miners, which
yeah.
was pretty much what you did yeah. in territorial Arizona.
So when, I'm not a restaurant owner. So I can't count. Go back. What era did your family come out here to this area?
How far back my grandfather was, but in 1863, my grandfather, great-great-great-grandfather was married to Emily Bragg. And Emily was either the daughter or the niece of Colonel Bragg. And in 1863, Colonel Bragg got the families together because we were from Virginia north of the Mason-Dixon yeah. line, and he was from the south. And he said, if you guys don't go west, we're going to wind up killing one another.
Oh, yeah, that's yeah. right. In the 1860s, there was some stuff going on
yeah.
on the
yeah.
north and south.
Right. So they went to North Platte, Nebraska, built 45 wagons, and there were three generations of Denny's that came out that time. One of them had already been out and back, and so he knew how to provision to trade with the Indians, and they had no incidents. They made it to Nevada. You know, they're provisioned with a lot of sugar, chocolate, tobacco,
yeah.
Things that traded well,
coffee.
Staples
and trades, yeah.
Yep. And they got to Nevada, and I can't remember the name of the little town, but they were broke, and... But it was a boom town. Everything was very expensive, so they made cigars and candy and did trade with all the miners and in the saloons and made enough money. They went up to Oregon on the Oregon Trail
yeah.
and settled in Goose Lake for a little while and then came down here about 1886.
Man,
yeah.
What a journey.
Oh, I can't imagine.
I did just a few weeks back, we loaded up what I call our Mile High Show mobile studio, my van, and did a 12-hour drive to California, where I'm from, San Francisco Bay Area.
Oh.
And my wife about killed me before we hit Kingman. So I don't know that I would have been able to survive a trek like that in a wagon roughing it because I get on everybody's nerves just going to the store.
Oh, so. it was just your life, and you were just moving while you
yeah,
were living.
Yeah.
I think that's the best way to look at it.
So settling here in a couple of generations of ranching, and then you're in a way carrying on that same tradition, still dealing with livestock, only you're grilling it and chopping it up.
Yeah.
That's more of the user end is what I'm familiar with. I'm a city boy, so when I moved right. out here from the Bay Area and seeing a thriving ag and FFA program at the high school, the Cooper Ag Center, and
right.
and all the stuff going on in the surrounding community. It was a real culture shock for me because our livestock comes from Safeway in the
right. Yeah, yeah.
You know, the farming is in the lit aisles with the streams coming down. You know, that's
right.
We were not an ag area. You'd have to, you know, the little vacations, the weekends out where you'd go into the valley and pay somebody to pick strawberries. And
right,
stuff.
Right.
That was our ag experience.
You know, I didn't get the ranching experience I would have liked
yeah.
to. My father's generation was, he graduated in 1957, and the likelihood of that generation staying on the farms and on the ranches wasn't very strong.
Just the way the population's changing
mm-hmm.
and industrial and...
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and my grandfather and my father didn't get along, so, you know, we made trips. At that point, all the ranches from the north were all sold, and my grandfather had a place in Skull Valley.
Yeah. That's still a neat little community.
Oh, isn't it so great? And it's that way because it is still ranching families that control most of the land, and the Yavapais just bought a big ranch down there, so...
I'm not ignoring you. I'm not real comfortable with these things, so I'm always checking to make sure I didn't turn it off.
This
isn't my my wheelhouse is cameras, not sound.
Oh,
so this is a recent development for me.
Kind of a new thing for you, sure.
So, did you yourself ever live out of the area, or have you pretty much stayed planted?
I had a football scholarship to Texas Lutheran. It's about 45 minutes east of San Antonio. And I spent a couple of years there. And, you know, my dad played fast pitch softball on a professional level. And we traveled to the East Coast for a couple of seasons. And one year we lived in Brockton, Massachusetts, and the next year in Tiverton, Rhode Island. And so we got to see a lot of country that way. And then my uncle played professional baseball, so I got to follow around with him and go to watch his games in different stadiums. We went to Dodger Stadium when he played.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Who did he play with?
He started with the Cardinals out of high school, 17 years old, drafted, and went from the Cardinals to the Indians. And then in 83, he was with Philadelphia, and that was the year they went to the World Series. And he won the Cy Young Award that year.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And what was his name?
John Denny.
Yep. I'll have to look that up.
Man, Skull Valley, Arizona.
Oh, beautiful! There's such a baseball and softball both have a rich history here. The isn't the softball Hall of Fame right there?
It was a softball capital of the world, and it was. Even when I pitched against a Japanese team and a team from New Zealand.
And that the Yavapai College program is deep with skill, and their history goes back.
Yeah.
Some great players coming out of there.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, Schilling was playing the Yavapai. Yeah.
What was your football career like?
Oh, you know, it was short. I was... Oh, God, I was 6'2", 220, and I was playing defensive end. And, you know, there just wasn't any way. And, you know, the coach said, God bless you. You got, you know, you hit hard, and you have all the heart in the world, but we just can't make you much bigger than you are. Yeah. And I kind of saw the writing on the wall, so I moved back to Arizona and turned 21 and got my real estate license and went to work with my mom. She had a company, or I helped her start a company, and actually... she was involved with the Butterfield Village here in Chino.
Butterfield Village, I'm not familiar.
That's Butterfield Road right here in Chino Valley. And actually, Paul Stewart was the name of the guy that did the subdivision, and she became a partner in the subdivision, and they donated the ground where the town hall is there and everything.
Nice.
Yeah, where the park is in that area.
Memory Park, library, all that.
In fact, I spent I don't know how many days this summer. I had a railroad tie tied to the back of my pickup, and all I did was drive around and knock the weeds down. So
I got to try that.
The guys from Safeway were coming up to look at the ground there where the original Safeway was.
Was that on the...
Where that new home place is.
Okay, where used to be the Alco. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, right there. And, so... Yeah, Chino has changed a lot. I can't believe. You know, even, you know, you get entrenched. I live like 2 miles from El Charro and Prescott.
Yeah.
So I come down Center Highway. I take a left onto Gurley and a right in behind the restaurant there. And that's my life for a lot of days. And I was really amazed because I lived in Paulden from 91 to 2000. And then we came back out here. I was amazed at the growth.
Yeah,
and the businesses and things that have come to Chino Valley.
Yeah, it's amazing because I through my work I'm back and forth. I moved out here in 04 to Paulden, and now we're living in Chino. But I'm back and forth to Prescott Valley a few times a week.
Right.
But it's amazing when some of the folks that I talk to that live and work in Prescott, they never come out to Chino.
No.
It's like, oh, yeah, I was out there a few months ago. It's just, you know, you get really centralized. So running the restaurant in Prescott, and living so close, just seeing that. And then when you guys open, when did you guys open up here?
We opened February 12th.
And you're pretty much out here.
I'm out most, here right yeah. now, day and night.
And that's one thing a lot of people don't, you know, if they don't come through Chino a lot, you know, especially if, you know, if it's really infrequent and they start seeing the all the homes, the development, the new retail coming in.
Right.
It's a big change. But one of the things that you guys got here, which is just beautiful, is this, what we're looking out here to the east.
Right.
Probably hasn't changed. Well, I guess that would have been. But in decades.
No,
this
no,
is what
no.
people were looking at decades ago.
Yeah, I mean, and if you, you look down the wash down here, you know, there's a couple of trailers yeah. stored over there. But I don't think that's changed much since my great-grandfather yeah. drove cows down and put them on the train. And probably back then, there was a lot more activity down there with stockyards and
yeah,
pigs
yeah.
pens than there is now. And that's pretty much pristine. That power line, of course, goes through there.
Oh, we can Photoshop that out. But just a beautiful view and just a gem of a spot that you guys were able to open up here, you know, a few months back. But let's drop a little bit. When the El Charro, what's the history of the El Charro in Prescott?
El Charro was started in 1959 by Don and Sophie Brambilla. And it was originally on Sheldon Street where the waffle iron is.
Okay.
It was there till 63. And then they moved to where it is now. It was a Continental Trailways bus station prior to El Charro. And before that, it was a mortuary. So there's a lot of spirits hanging around in that
yeah.
building. But it's changed hands. Oh, gosh. The Brambillas owned it, and then Dink Barnes owned it. Al Clayton, and then my Uncle Kurt Mann bought it in 84, 85, and I bought it from them in 2000.
Yeah. So you've been 16 years
uh-huh.
there.
Yeah.
It's an institution. That's
yeah.
It's a spot everybody goes. And it's been... When did you say it moved into its current location?
Yeah, so it's been there since 63. But
63.
Yeah, everything 57 years
yeah.
is how long it's been.
Now, has it always been I'm trying to, in my head, think you walk in the restaurants kind of on the bottom, then the bar area up top?
Yep.
Has it always been like that?
No.
Or when did that bar come into play?
The bar came around in about 2000. Well, it was 2009, July 2nd.
So under mm-hmm. your reign there.
Yep, yeah, I...
Beautiful looking spot in there, man.
Oh,
I love it.
Thank you.
It's just
thank
a gem.
You. Yeah, we had a lot of time to think about that. There was a guy had a 1-hour photo business in there.
Okay. No, I know exactly.
Yeah.
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 I didn't make the connection.
Right.
I went in there a couple of times. Didn't he have his? He always had his dog in there with him.
Yep.
Yep.
Always
okay.
had a dog, and he was in a wheelchair. He'd been in an accident.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't make the connection.
Yeah.
I had
yeah.
when we moved out here, like I said in 04, for a few years I was taking some stuff there because I was. I needed a bunch of large negatives, and
right.
he was like the only guy that could work with those.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Medium formats.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. Hasselblad negs that I had laying around. I wanted to get on digital. I didn't
cool.
have a way to do them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very nice. So you, what other changes have you instituted with El Charro?
Well, we started delivery service.
Yeah.
I was sued by a man in a wheelchair, and I think it was like 2002. And at the time, the readily achievable option without putting me out of business because I couldn't put a handicapped bathroom in there.
Just the structure.
Right. Well, once we added the cantina, I could put one in. But the area where the handicapped bathroom is now was actually a place where we had our large parties. Could seat about
yeah.
12 people. And so, yeah, we got...
paparazzi over here.
All right, yeah.
Keep it up, Dwight. I'll call a cop.
So, yeah, we started delivery, and
that was
oh
a
gosh.
Was that a way? How did that connect to the lawsuit?
As far as the ADA was concerned, in the state of Arizona Attorney General's office, it was a readily achievable option. It was a way for us to stay in business and to meet the needs of people.
Since it was difficult for them to come in, we take it to you.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah, and then, just last 2 years ago, he sued me again, and this time he did it in federal court, and I couldn't represent myself. So, and he sued the property owner, too, because I just leased there.
Yeah.
And So we ended up putting a ramp in and a railing and retrofitting the restaurant so it met all the applicable laws and conditions.
See, those are, when we were talking the other night, this is kind of what I was saying, because as a customer, as a general public, our interpretation, our vision of a restaurant is you come in and there's a kitchen, you make some food and you service, and that, dealing with that like you did, obviously there are laws in place to make things fair for everybody.
Right.
You're dealing with a fairly new building where everything's engineered and geared towards the current laws. It's
right.
One thing. When
right.
You're dealing with a historic building, to make it adaptable to 2016 isn't always as easy as it sounds.
No.
Because you got to deal with what you have to do to satisfy, and rightly so, to satisfy the needs of the community
right.
in various forms.
Mm-hmm.
Then you got to think, okay, well, you don't own the building. What's the landlord going to allow me to do? What
right.
What structurally can I do and still maintain that historic feel from the outside?
Exactly.
And it's a whole ball of wax
yeah.
that the public doesn't think
yeah.
about.
And what you can do and keep it in a dollar range that you can stay open
and
yeah. get recoup your money eventually at some point.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
So what is the history? Now, I may be backwards on this because, you know, and that's the other thing with small town living like Chino
right.
Valley, even Prescott,
yeah,
that
yeah.
the rumor mills fly.
Oh man,
what's the history of this building? The building that El Charro Norte is again with the beautiful view over the patio. So
right.
come on out. What's the address again? I forget.
2879 Arizona Trail.
Great.
Yeah.
Now I knew it as Doreen's when
right?
I moved out here. It
uh-huh.
was a bar and grill, some food, and then they stopped food for a while, and then they started food for a while, and
right.
But I was out here for some music things and a couple of interviews and stuff like that. But what's the history of this place where we're sitting right now?
The original building, which is just where the bar area is itself,
yeah.
Was built in 1958 by a man by the name of Bob Campbell. And his dream was to have a bait and tackle shop that sold beer. And he put a pond out front. It was called the fishing hole.
Yeah.
And you could come out and catch fish by the pound and sit down and have a beer afterward. And what normally took place was the kids went fishing and the dads went and sat at the bar.
I've heard some great stories by people. And again, they change over the years, so I'm never quite sure how nostalgia has colored the picture a little bit. But I've heard it was just a dynamite spot to hang out, and it was the best place to spend an afternoon.
Yeah, and really out of the way back then.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was 1977. We got done with baseball practice, and a buddy of mine, Don Roscoff, lived out here, and he said, hey.
I know Don well. Yeah.
He said, they're draining the catfish. They're draining the fishing hole. Let's go out there and catch some fish. So we were running around. We could just catch them with our hands. Covered in mud. It was hilarious. It was a blast. But I guess the cantina part was built in 1986, and I found that on the assessor's map.
Yeah.
I don't know who did it, but you know everything in this building, even before I had anything to do with it, is all used. Everything was reclaimed. You can just see that there are telephone poles and railroad ties, and
it's called character.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So in 1997, Doreen and I and a partner, Pat Moore, bought the building.
Now, Doreen being?
Doreen's, my wife.
That was your wife at the time.
Okay. My wife at the time. And
testing.
So we shut down the original part, and it was closed for like 6 months.
Yeah.
And did a pretty extensive remodel on it, insulated it, put more than two breakers in it, all that high-tech
stuff. Got rid of the pennies in the fuse boxes.
That's what was heating the walls with the wire. And then in 99, we finished this back part. We used to do a lot of whitewater raft trips up on the Green River in the Gray and Desolation Canyon. And we'd go up there and finish up the trip in the town of Green River. And there was a place called Ray's Tavern. And it was just the coolest place. And behind the bar, they had a grill, and they did pork chops and hamburgers. Well, we wanted something similar, but I wanted to do steaks because steaks in my family were a big deal, and we have our special steak sauce, and we have everything.
Nice.
And we were going to do steaks, and it was going to be great. So we built another bar in the back with the kitchen behind it, and then we got divorced.
Things happen.
Yeah, they do. And it was actually, it was a good thing for both of us. I missed out on getting 10 times what we paid for the building, but you know, I was able to keep my house moving business, and that's where all the material came from.
Yeah.
From this, if I couldn't move a building, I took it apart and saved it. And I mean, there's pieces of the old YMCA pool house. There's some of the beams from the Lincoln Street Railroad.
This building in itself is a historical it's a history of the whole area.
It is And you know, all these windows came out of a gas station where Taco Bell is in Miller Valley, and you know, the light fixtures, everything, the doors. In fact, I had to put that door on because the other one was shot, so I bought a door to swap at a yard sale on Mount Vernon Street, and it's used too. So
it's like a quilt. Patchwork of the whole community. That's great.
Something I need to set down and write it
catalog
all down,
it
where
down.
Everything
yeah.
came
oh,
from
that'd be
and
fantastic.
The little story that goes with it. And
coffee table book. I could see it now.
Yeah. Or at least something that goes along with the menu to explain what we're doing here. The day my divorce was final, I closed escrow on El Charro and got an incredible lesson in the restaurant business. You know, there's only three things on the menu that come out of the freezer at El Charro, and that's the French fries, the onion rings, and the jalapeno poppers. We make everything from scratch.
Oh, wow.
All of our sauces, our salsas, our refried beans, our rice, our chili rellenos, our sopapillas, our fry bread, everything we make from scratch. And, you know, there's a wonderful old soul. He's not old. He's 2 years older than I am, so I guess he might be old. But he's been at El Charro in Prescott for 43 years.
Oh, wow.
He started when he was 13, Phil Flores. Just an awesome guy. There was another guy named Rudy Acosta, and he was there longer than Phil. But in 2007, he decided to move on and do his own thing. And, you know, when I bought El Charro, we sold what the Brambillas had on the menu, and that was it. You know, after 2008, the construction trade died. Everybody left.
Yeah.
We had a retired. We just had a different clientele, a different demographic that we had to serve. So we came up with a lot of fish items, fish tacos, shrimp tacos, the burritos, did our best to accommodate the new people, and we expanded the menu. So you know, I would have had a really hard time with Rudy, but Phil was open to pretty much anything we wanted to try.
So you got to do that dance between, okay, we've got to adjust for the clientele.
Right.
And at the same time, keep that traditional feel for the folks that have kept us in business since the 50s, basically.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. And that's what happens. They come in, they never look at a menu. They don't even know we sell fish. They get their green chili burrito enchilada style or their chili relleno dinner, and that's what they came in for.
Yeah.
And, so it's, and trying, we stay with the original recipes. We haven't deviated anything. But, companies change, our suppliers change, the produce changes almost on a weekly basis.
Yep.
Serranos are hot one day, they're not hot the next day. The Anaheim's the same way. The tomatoes sometimes are a lot sweeter, sometimes they're a little saltier, and you know, we're putting the same ingredients in, so we have to we use the recipe, but it's all about taste. You have to taste the food before it goes out. And so, you know, consistency is the hardest thing. If you look at a corporate store, they pretty much renovate their menu every 6 months so that they don't have to do the consistency thing. And we get a lot of people that come. Yet it's great. I know we've done our job. When somebody comes in, it tastes just like it did when I was in high school.
Yeah. That's what I remember.
So that's incredible. It gives me Yeah, gives me goosebumps.
So what prompted the expansion for the second restaurant, the El Norte?
Well, you know,
into Chino.
I was at Staples buying supplies, and Mark Duncan, he and Sue Ann.
I know Mark well.
Yeah. He owned the Apple Pan. He's selling real estate now. He says, hey, I just listed your old place. Amanda and my wife Amanda and I were out that afternoon, and I pretty much started working on it the next day. I mean, this was in June. We didn't close escrow until January.
So June 15th? Of 2015, so like
yeah,
a year,
yes, yes.
Just over a year ago.
Yeah, yeah, and I didn't actually own the building till January, but I was working on it.
Yeah,
you know, I have about 13 years of salvage in the building, and so it's kind of a once in a lifetime project. I've had two back surgeries. House moving is not an easy job.
Yeah,
there's no way I could replicate the effort or the materials. That's all old growth lumber in there.
Yeah.
You can't find it anymore. The way it's sawn with this big circular saws, they use band saws now.
Yeah.
So all those little things in there, you know, I had a chance to get them back, and I couldn't wait. And I thought, you know, we got out here and we started working, and oh, another Mexican restaurant. There's like seven Mexican restaurants in Chino, you know, and everybody. So what can we do differently? Steaks. They wanted steaks. They wanted a fish fry. We have them both. You know, and right after we opened, the Windmill Farms opened again.
Yeah.
It's good for them. That's a beautiful facility.
Yeah.
It needs to be used. In fact, last night they had a big wedding. They couldn't do their fish fry. They sent everybody down here. We had an incredible night.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
nice.
It worked out really well.
That's another thing. You know, the thought, again, from the public is, you know, well, we don't need another Mexican restaurant, or we don't need another this, or we don't need another that.
Right.
But, and the big corporate ones do the same thing. You know, you're not going to get a McDonald's opening up unless there's something else. They don't look for the market where there's nothing.
Right.
They look where the market is, where like-minded places are already succeeding.
Exactly.
And I know, you know, I work with some of the restaurants, Joe and his son Tony and Eric Veneer down at Big Daddy's. We're there quite a bit.
Uh-huh.
So I come in contact with the different restaurant owners and the managers and the workers quite a bit. And that feeling of competition isn't there. It's like we all need to succeed.
Yes, exactly.
Especially in a community like Chino where,
right.
and I work pretty tight with the town. The only, well, not the only, but the main source of income for the town is sales tax. That's
right.
It. There
yeah.
is no property
yeah.
tax. There's a property
right.
tax you pay to the state and to the county.
The county, right.
And we get
right.
our piece, but
yeah.
but sales tax is what it is. There's the town, the community can't survive if there's only one place where
no,
everybody goes.
They can't.
We
they
need
can't.
That influx of new customers, new money, and there's, you know, I don't care how great a restaurant is, how great a bar is, most of the time people don't go to the same place every night.
Right.
You want to kind of go around
yeah.
and have a little variety and
sure.
stuff. And especially, like here, there's nothing that can replace sitting out here, listening to some music, which we're going to do in a little bit
yeah,
here,
right.
and looking at that view, watching
oh,
the
yeah.
sunset and
oh.
the hills turn orange.
Oh,
and
man.
It's just beautiful.
Yeah, we had a duet. Joe Berger plays jazz guitar, mm-hmm. and her partner, I don't know his name, but
I can't
he plays
remember,
electronic
yeah, yeah.
clarinet. And it was a full moon. The moon was coming right up over
oh,
that tree.
Beautiful.
And when he finished the last note of the clarinet in the silence, and you could hear the coyotes. The coyotes were
oh,
all singing
man.
Back to the clarinet, man. And it was just, this can't happen anywhere
yeah.
else but right here.
So moving in here, this the decision or the motivation to expand out and stretch the El Charro wings, it wasn't a matter. It doesn't sound like anyway. Correct me if I'm wrong. That it was a okay. We're going to expand out and we're going to find a place. It's more. It's your own history in this building,
right?
And the personal connection to come out and occupy this space again.
It was. I had been looking at the old Stockman's Bank,
yeah.
for years.
That should be a steakhouse.
That's where I wanted to go. But you know, it's a bank, and I talked to the town before I came out here, and I said, We need to go out and we need to look at the building. If you will grandfather the building, I can do this project. If I have to reinvent the wheel, it won't work.
It's not going to work, yeah.
You know, there's $350,000 that needs to be invested in that old Stockman's Bank building to turn it into a viable restaurant. There's no kitchen.
Yeah.
You know, and once you get it done, it's on an acre, so you got to make a deal on the property behind you. You're not going to have room to park.
Yeah.
So, you know, I know the guy that owns it. He's a good buddy of mine. I wanted everything in the world I could do to get out there, to get into that building, and it would have been on the highway, and I wouldn't have this problem that I have out here being off the beaten path. But I didn't have the money, and I didn't want that green banana. I know that out here, you know, we're through the process.
Yeah,
you know, and I've got a trademark. Paul Murphy's a good buddy of mine. Murphy's Restaurant.
Yeah,
and you know, that landmark status is. You have landmark status after 25 years. We have more than double that in town, and we have a trademark name. And it works. I was surprised how many people knew about El Charro in town and knew about my ownership when I came out here. And, you know, it goes a long, long way. It really does.
Yeah.
You know, and as far as competition goes, I don't ever look at people that are doing the same thing I'm doing as competition. I have to compete against the numbers. I have to compete against the nut that I have to make every month and our personal projections as a business. You know, we set goals and we compete to make that goal. And so, you know, what everybody else is doing is fine. And I used to spend a lot of time in other places so I could see what everybody was doing. And it was part of business.
Yeah.
Now I'm just
to know
busy.
What's going on.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, too. If you've got, you know, four or five restaurants, you know, not including, like, the fast food stuff, but, like, places where you can come, sit down, have a good meal.
Right.
If they're thriving, then now Chino Valley can become the destination to come to, not just going into Prescott.
Right,
just going into Prescott Valley to You don't have this, and I'm looking out at the view.
No.
You don't have this. You don't have the aesthetics in the bar. It's just a beautiful bar with the tile and so you get that old feel, and at the same time you know you're sitting there watching the Olympics
playing on TV
and the interaction with the bartender and the friendliness. But you don't get that at every single place.
No.
You know, there's a place for, and they're not a sponsor, so I say, there's a place for the Buffalo Wild Wings.
Right, right.
That's great. That's not a place where you can come back and sit and relax. And, you know, you go there and you catch the game.
Yes.
And you get some food, you grab a few beers, and you feel that excitement. But to come and just sit back, listen to some great music, watch the view, enjoy some food and drinks, you just don't. You need places like that. You need places like this in the area. And it's great to see it come open. How long did this sit vacant?
It was a couple of years. Yeah. Everything we saw inside said August of 13. Yeah.
But what a nice spot to sit. What were some of the hoops you had to jump through? You talked about some of the repairs and things. What were some of the things you had to do to get this ready for your opening?
Well, you know, one of the things that Dorian and I made a mistake in the beginning was, you know, we didn't count the seats and look at the size of the kitchen. that was a no-win scenario from the beginning. There was no way that little kitchen we built could possibly service this big restaurant.
Yeah.
It's a big building. There's 3,000 square feet. There's
how many seats? How many places packed out? What's the head
fire
count?
Department says we have 100 seats.
Okay, so 100 it is.
But, you know, with the outside area, I mean, God, we could seat 100 and pretty close to 200 people with
now,
the outside.
It looks like primarily what you're utilizing is this patio we're sitting on here, which is adjacent to the main dining room.
Yeah.
But you also have, it's basically like three patios. You've got this one here,
the one
with
the
big fire pit, the covered one that overlooks, plus the horseshoe. Are you utilizing the horseshoes and stuff now, or are you kind of?
People are just we're going to plan a tournament for the weekend after Labor Day. We're setting up for a tournament. I'm going to build the bracket. I'm going to get
Some
people signed up, and we're going to do it. I've been wanting to do it since we opened, but, you know, we're getting our feet on the ground. And now I can be out here a lot more because I've got a manager in town. So, yeah, you know, and a bit, well, so the hoop that we had was basically to get to duplicate the Prescott kitchen out here.
To, again, brings back that consistency factor you were talking
exactly,
about.
Exactly, exactly. And the ability to serve the building. So we had to add on. We didn't actually add on to the kitchen itself. We added on a dish pit, dry storage, and a prep area. And then we crammed the kitchen area that we had with the balance of the equipment that we use in town. And then we enclosed the bar area. Used to, you could sit at the bar and look behind and see the kitchen. And, you know, that worked. That was a Johnny Carino's thing. That was a macaroni kitchen thing.
And watching just, the presentation. And,
and it's not what everybody thought it was going to be. It's, you know, there's a bunch of guys in there sweating, working hard. You know, and it's not pretty to watch when you're trying to enjoy your dinner. So we closed that area in, put booths in, actually increased our seating.
Oh, nice.
And, and you know, made a nice, quiet, intimate room while all hell's breaking loose in the kitchen.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It works out well. If I would have started from scratch, I probably wouldn't have put the kitchen in the middle of the restaurant. But it works. It works pretty well. So
nice.
Yeah.
So where do you see this going? Where this restaurant? What other kind of expanding a little more? Are you going to concentrate on what you got? Or
well, we're hard to say. You know, the thing is, we have a great system in Prescott, and it's a real dysfunctional building too, because it was added on to, and we make it work, and we have an incredible flow there, and we have a good schedule there, and a cleaning schedule, and everything works for that building, and we just thought we could Xerox that and bring it out here and plug it in here, and it just didn't work that way.
Yeah.
And you know, and so we're. Our labor's going through the roof because we're trying to do the same thing every night at the end of the night. Some nights we're just not busy out here.
Yeah.
So we're having to think on our feet quite a bit, and we're having to kind of rethink things.
Growing pains.
And now we have 6 months of information, so we know what our nut is, and we know what we have to do to pay the bills every month. And so our focus right now is to get the labor under control, and then to get some people out here.
Yeah, and it's hard to, because like when you first open, you get the looky loos, the folks that are interested to come in, and you really can't base that. You got to have a few months to go. Okay, you know, and whatever it happens to be. Okay, well, Wednesdays are real hard. Tuesdays are dead. Or whatever it happens to be.
Right.
So you kind of work out those kinks and figure out where you need your staff and where you can go a little leaner. And,
sure. And now that I know Chino, because Chino and Prescott are just business-wise two completely different places. Chino's not busy in the summer. If I had an opportunity to do it again, I would have opened the day after Labor Day weekend.
Yeah.
Because everything's settled down, kids are back in school.
Yep.
People are interested in Chino. And not Disneyland and going fishing
exactly.
and
going hitting the river or whatever, yeah.
And you know, people, the losing a month of summer ruined tourism in northern Arizona. Huh. It destroyed it because most of the tourism in northern Arizona is local tourism, except for of course the canyon, and the Monument Valley and that area. Everybody comes up to get out of the heat. And what we're seeing now is that the 4th of July is the big hurrah.
Yeah.
And after that, it slows down. People get ready to put their kids back in school. Labor Day weekend is a little bit of a bump, but it's awful. I mean, we just lost that whole month. And you have this big, giant month of July, and then it's back down in August. And you've got this debt and this tax burden and everything rolling, and it just hits flat.
Yeah. The government doesn't give you a break because you had a slow month? No?
No. And I talked to the city about it. I said, don't you guys miss it? And they say, well, no, Walmart picks up when it's back to school time. And I didn't say anything. Because you could have another month, and you could have back to school time. But, you know, the a lot of things. There's the, you know, the teachers union, those kind of things that it's over, it's done, and it's not going to change. Yeah. So you just have to figure out how to work with it. And like I say, now I know that we're going to cut staff back in the summer, because what you were talking about is called the honeymoon period
yeah.
of a new business. And that's when everybody's coming, and it's incredible. And the problem is that was February, March, and April.
Yeah.
And then May came around and warmed up, and everybody started working in their yard and doing that kind of thing. And it was hot.
Yeah.
And we didn't have our air conditioning set up in the front yet. We still don't have it back here, but we're keeping it comfortable
yeah.
in there.
Yeah.
And so the next time around, you know, we're going to cut back in the summer here, which will be fine. We'll just send them all into Prescott to work, and I won't have to hire a new crew in there.
Yep, and they'll be trained, and you just shuffle them back, and they get to keep their income. Uh-huh. So, yeah, that's great.
And I don't know if you ever have enough capital when you're starting up.
Yeah.
You know, and it just kind of works that way. So, you know, we'll get through it. You know, right? Like, you know, like I said, I'm here 7 days a week, 12 hours a day. I'm the fill-in dishwasher, bartender,
delivery
busser,
guy.
Delivery guy. You know, whatever it takes. And you have to be here to do that.
Yeah.
You can't say, okay, so-and-so, you're closing tonight, because they know their friend is a single mom and has three kids, and they don't want to send her home early.
Yeah.
And, you know, as the owner, I have to do what I do so everybody can have a job.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
in the you got to look at the long play.
Yeah.
It's okay. It might not be the best for tonight. It might not be the best for this week. But six months from now, when you're still working and we're still open, that's what's important.
That's the payoff. Yeah. That's what. And because Roberto Martinez is in the kitchen here, has been with us for 18 years.
Oh wow.
And his cousin, David Martinez, has been with us 5 years. And Javier has been with us 8 years. You know, so I have a seasoned kitchen out here, too.
Very nice.
I had an extremely talented kitchen in Prescott. And it was in Roberto's cousin and Phil and a couple other guys are in town now. And everything's fine in town. Everything's fine out here. But, man, I don't want to send these guys home. I don't want to quit. I don't own a property in Prescott. That's a great job. As long as I own that, I'll have an income, but it's a job.
Yeah.
Out here, we have the property, and we, you know, I have an opportunity in 10 years to pay this off, sell the business, keep the property, and have an income.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a lot at stake because, you know, in 2008, everybody lost a lot. We all lost. Basically, I did anyway. Yeah. All my retirement. So, you know, I'm making another run at it.
Yeah.
You know, because
just to keep your head up.
Yeah.
Keep your head above
exactly.
water.
Exactly.
Now I want to ask you that because I was with the newspaper here for a number of years, and you're never going to make everybody happy.
Right.
You know, when I'm working at the paper, nobody writes the letter to say, "Hey, you did a great job."
Yeah. No.
And you know you're doing what you know you're doing your best. You're making you're taking care of business. And you get one guy who's at 3 a.m. on his computer typing out a stuff. Those are the only ones that stuck in my head.
Right.
The letters where somebody was harping on me about something.
Mm-hmm.
On this show.
Right.
Same thing. You know, you interview people, you have a great time, you're doing it. And then you get one guy who drops in something and says, "Oh, you messed up the volume on this," you know, the intro on this cut out. You know, that's the one that sticks in my head. How do you filter through? Obviously, you got, you know,
oh my gosh.
I've been in here 5-6 times, and I'm seeing some of the same faces, so you've got a clientele.
Right.
You've got people that are happy.
Yes.
How do you deal with the occasional, "I'm not happy"? And I'm bringing this up because we had that couple in here the other night.
Right.
When Les and I were sitting at the bar. You handled it beautifully, I thought. What's your philosophy on taking care of problems?
If you win an argument, you lose a customer. It's just that simple. So you make, what can I do for you? What can I do to make it right? And it's really something that I like to negotiate. If there's a problem with the staff and a customer, I just say make it right. Whatever you have to do, make it right. If it's a face-to-face issue, we can resolve it. I can either bring you what you want, If we made a mistake, we'll bring you the right food. If not, we'll take it off. If you don't want that, we'll take it off the check. Whatever we have to do to make it happy. The ones that I can't fix and I can't are social media.
Yeah.
And now that they have all these reality television shows about restaurants, everyone is a food
everybody's
critic.
An expert.
Yeah, and everybody's an expert. And, you know, we do the best we can. Last week in town, a lady got a beer, and there was a crack in the glass. She asked for a new glass. The bartender poured the beer in a new glass. She lost her mind because there could have been a shard of glass in the beer, and it's understandable to a point. But she just kept on, and we comped the entire meal. Chris did in town, comped the entire meal. She called me the next day. We were on the phone for an hour, and it should have been a five-minute conversation.
Yeah.
I'll talk to him. He'll apologize to you. It won't happen again.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I just, the main thing is not, like I said, if you win the argument, you've lost the customer, and you have to think about how often they come in and how much money they spend. And you don't want to lose that. And you don't want to lose customers. And you don't want to lose friends.
Yeah, you want to make people happy.
Yeah, it's not worth it.
You know, when you're in a customer service business, you're there to serve the customer.
But
you want to make them happy.
Right, but at the same time, I was sitting...
How far do you go?
I was sitting in my restaurant having a talk with my food supplier. And this guy comes in. He doesn't know me from Adam. He sits down. His chip basket gets about... until there's like five or six chips in it, throws a nickel in it. And then he calls the server over. There's a nickel in the bottom of my chick bag. You know how many hands have touched that nickel? And he just wants something free.
It's the old joke about the guy who comes in with bugs in a napkin, eats the meal, and then throws it in.
Bug in there.
I think the Little Rascals used to use that.
I watched some people in here the other day, and they're all looking at everything. And the guy's looking at his beer. And finally, he finds in the menu where flautas, it says, there's two flautas. And my wife described it as two corn tortillas.
Yeah.
And then the chicken or whatever you put in it.
Yeah.
And he says, hey, it says right here, two flour tortillas. The flautas are supposed to be made with two tortillas on each flauta. I said, no, we don't make them that. Oh, he says, oh, I know, new cook stuff, you got to get work. I said, no.
That's what we do.
Cooks have been there forever, and this is the way he does it. He says, well, how about you just take one flauta off? And that's, I mean, it was a game with him. It's negotiate your check at El Charro. And so you have, once you find somebody who is definitely either just chronically unhappy.
Yeah.
Or is definitely trying to take you.
Yeah.
You finally have to say,
what's
your
motive? What do you do?
Exactly. Yeah. And you have to say, you know what? We try every time to make you happy, and it's just not working out. And luckily for you, there's a lot of Mexican food restaurants in town.
Yeah.
And just leave it at that. Yeah.
The days of when somebody would have had to have gone home and picked up the phone and called, or pulled out a typewriter and type out a letter or write it out, long gone.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
While you're eating.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Tick, 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 tick. Oh,
yeah.
Yelp. Oh, oh
yeah,
Facebook.
Exactly. Yeah.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah, I've had those, and they're like, they're flyby people that they're on their way through, and they stop, and they don't know the menu. They don't know what to order. They don't know what to ask for. And I read their comments, and it's obvious. They don't know anything about the restaurant, or they could have asked and had what they wanted to have for the meal. And so
one of the things I like doing when I come into a place for the first time, especially if I'm like out of the area traveling or whatever, and not like a chain place, but you know, like an independent place, one of the things I'll ask the server, what do you eat?
Mm-hmm.
What do you like?
Right. Oh, yeah.
They make a suggestion, not necessarily a special of the day or something. Just what do you think? You know, I was at a sandwich place when I was in California. I said, what's your favorite sandwich?
Right.
And he goes, oh, this is what best sandwich I ever had.
Yeah.
It was because you give them a chance to really let them know what, you know, let the customer know what they want to showcase.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And I, you know, my favorite, the reason I bought El Charro, because my aunt and uncle were going to sell it and things were going to change, was the cheese and onion enchiladas. I love the red sauce. Ah, they're just, Our enchilada sauce, I've never tasted anything like it anywhere else, and that's it for me.
So is that what you would say? Somebody who's never ate at El Charro at either location, come in, that's what...
Cheese and onion enchiladas and a relleno. And the nice thing about the rellenos now is we stuff them with everything from our shredded meats to fish to shrimp, and that just makes an incredible, incredible meal. Yeah.
So, run down. Where can folks find out about the restaurant? Maybe take a look at what you got to offer before coming down. Website.
Yes, we have a website. We also have Facebook, elcharronorte.com. There's a full menu on there. The one in Prescott, we partner with a company called Chow Now. Mm-hmm. You can actually order online.
Oh, nice.
We have an app you can download in Prescott. We haven't set it up out here yet. We're kind of waiting. We want to build up the delivery business before we go that far, because at that point you have to have somebody that's all they do is delivery. And right now everybody's doing it. Yeah. So we'll get that set up and then we'll have that. We have a full menu on the website, and we have a Facebook page where we post who's playing music and what specials we have. And
very nice. Yeah. Now, again, I can't stress it enough. If you're coming out here, grab a seat on the patio, look at the view, but you also got music. Are you doing that on a regular schedule? Or
every Friday and Saturday
Friday
night.
Friday and Saturday, from 6 to 9.
We're gonna make it exclusively outdoor, so we don't know how long it's gonna last.
Yes, however the weather allows.
Right. We used to do it in town, and when Coyote Joe's closed, we did it in the cantina, and people are great to come listen to music. It's a wonderful thing, but we need to move people to make money.
Yeah,
and inside they have a tendency to sit and watch and. And we need to sell food, so we're going to try to keep it outside.
Well, that's nice. And from the days I've been out here and looking at some of the schedules and the flyers and talking with the musicians who are out here, is there a certain feel you're looking for, or just a good variety?
We want a good variety. We want to change it up. What we want is music that people can talk over. They can enjoy themselves. And what seems to happen, and I've watched it. I watched it last night with Dale Long when he played.
I think that's him that just pulled up, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
You know, he started out a little loud, and I told him to turn it down. Everybody has great amps and great speakers. And I keep saying, bring them down.
A place to enjoy the music, but have a little conversation, enjoy a drink or two and some food.
And what happens is, you know, the conversation slows down and everybody's attention turns toward the music and the atmosphere, and they have a wonderful night. And, it's been really nice.
Nice.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to get out there? Give a little plug for what people can expect and let them know what kind of atmosphere they can enjoy out here.
What we do out here that we don't do in Prescott are our steaks. They're not on the menu. We do a 16-ounce bone-in ribeye with a rosemary garlic-infused compound butter. And then we have a steak tampiqueña, which was invented at the Tampico Club in Mexico City. Our version is a 10-ounce ribeye with a fire-grilled Anaheim pepper and ghost pepper cheese on top of that, and with rice and beans. Both of them come with rice and beans and a tortilla. We're going to start the NFL ticket's going to kick off here soon. We've got 7 televisions.
So this is the place to
get
your game on.
This is going to be the place to be, catch the game. We're going to have 250 Bud and Bud Light during all live NFL games, so that'll be Monday, Thursday night, and all day Sunday.
Nice.
We have a special coming up in Valpak. When you buy one chicken wing order, you get the second one at half price.
Oh, nice.
So I really want to get we also have, if you're coming from church on a Sunday and you bring your program, you get a 10% discount.
Very nice.
So, you know, we have this back room that's separate from the cantina for quiet dining, for family dining. We have the cantina where the televisions and the bar is. We have 55 different kinds of tequila. We use fresh lime. We use real lime juice in all our margaritas. We grow mint right out front that we put in our mojitos.
Nice.
So I served a mojito today, and the mint was alive 2 minutes before I put her on the bar.
Your bartender, what's her name? She was here the other night, too.
Jenny.
Jenny.
We have Jenny. We have Jesse right now.
She was making something when Les and I were sitting at the bar. With blackberries
yeah.
and fresh mint. What was that?
That's the Mexican moonshiner. And
that looked good.
Yeah, Roger Klein is a big fan of El Charro. His mom lives in the Mountain Club, and he ate El Charro. You got a delivery?
Oh,
not yet. Okay. Okay.
No, we can wrap.
Okay.
Go ahead.
All right. Anyway,
it just looked great.
He comes in once a year. He puts on a free concert in Prescott.
Yeah.
He always starts at El Charro, comes in and has some drinks, signs some autographs. So we put Roger taste tested and approved. We have the Mexican moonshiner. We use his Mexican moonshine tequila in. And we also have one called the Bandito Mojito, which we use. We make a mojito, but we put serranos and oranges
nice,
in it.
Nice.
And so it's very refreshing, but it has a little kick at the end. So.
Well, we've been talking about running a business and keeping one open and making customers happy. So we'll let you go. Thanks, Gary. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I really appreciate it.
South of the border, I rode back one day. There in a veil of white, by candlelight, she knelt to pray. The mission bells told me that I shouldn't stay. South of the border, down Mexico way. Hi, 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 hi,